To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, if you'd like, we can talk about cars. We can talk about motor homes. We can talk about cars. We can even talk about motorcycles. Sometimes we'll have a question or an answer, and sometimes we won't. Well, we're all good. We're really good with diesels and internal combustion engines like gasoline. On the other hand as well, we have a diesel guy here who runs a diesel company. His name is Alan Salem. He's my son. And he knows a little bit about diesels, but especially down the accessory side, yes?
Yeah.
Are you sleeping over there?
No. Okay. Both sides, repair and accessories.
Okay, so if you have a diesel question, and maybe you want to talk about a cold air intake, or if you want to talk about things that you should not be doing to your truck, we can help you with that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And let me tell you first about Larry Harker's Auto. They've been a trusted name for automotive repair since 1967. They've been around since 1967. I can't tell you how many shops open up, and 2 and 3 years later, you drive by and the place is empty or it's wrapped in police tape. It takes a lot of good, solid repair to be around since 1967. They do alignments, auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, all kinds of maintenance, and they have the equipment and the knowledge to find and fix your car. And Bob, who runs the shop, and Ellen, who runs the front end, they're very good people, but Bob is one of those he has a lot of tenacity. So if you tell him nobody else can fix your car, that's exactly the kind of, that's kind of like waving the red flag in front of the bull. 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Okay, tell me about diesels, and tell me maybe about what do people do with diesels that they should not do?
Oh, drive them short trips.
Okay. Let them idle a lot?
Yeah, idling's not quite as bad. It's the 4 mile trips where the truck doesn't get up to operating temperatures, you know, to work and back to work, to work and back to work, to work and back to work. And then, you know, they don't get it out, and especially the late model stuff.
Okay. And then the symptoms of this going to work 4 miles and back is what? What will they notice?
Well, they'll notice, probably start with the lack of power, maybe a check engine light, and then it'll eventually get into a limp mode because the exhaust filter will get clogged up and not have a chance to regenerate.
Okay. I'm seeing up here in Payson, I'm seeing a lot of construction people who pull up to the construction site, they leave their diesel idling, and they may be gone for 30 or 45 minutes, then they come back. One of them told me the other day that he had to take it in for a regeneration. I think it's where the truck itself cleans up the plugged exhaust filter.
Yes.
So they have to take it to the dealer for the regeneration, and they claim they're paying like $250.
Mm-hmm.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I told them the fix is to shut the damn thing off when they're going to sit there for a while.
A lot of trucks will actually regenerate in park.
Okay.
So I'm not sure exactly what the reasoning for that is, but they should. I mean, when we regenerate them in the parking lot, we regenerate them in park, you know,
okay.
Sitting in the parking lot.
I didn't mean park. I mean, they're sitting there idling for 20, 30, 40 minutes, and I don't think we ever get hot enough to light the particulate filter.
What they'll do is they'll kick up the idle.
Okay.
Automatically.
All right.
They'll kick up the idle. When we start them manually, it automatically kicks up the idle, holds it at 2,000 RPMs, but they, you know, again, depending on the year and the make and the model and all that kind of stuff, sometimes it's kind of hard to get it to trigger while it's at idle. But, I mean, ideally the best thing is to take it out and drive it on the highway, you know, above 50 miles an hour for 20, 25 miles, and that should sure take care of it.
Okay, and the particulate filter is this device that's going to catch the carbon, and then we're going to burn the carbon. And then what we send out of the tailpipe is no longer carbon and soot.
Yeah, that's why you don't see a lot of these late model diesels that smoke anymore.
Okay, and when you do see the late model diesels that smoke on a hard acceleration, what does that tell you?
It could tell you a number of different things. I mean, it could tell you that they've removed the emissions equipment, or they have done some sort of an aftermarket programmer or injectors or something that's, you know, pumping more fuel that they know what to do with.
That was kind of a trick question.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you 100%. The late model stuff, the newer stuff.
Yeah.
Can we
11,
go back?
Well, actually, you're probably 8 up.
Okay. 2008 and north of that.
Yes.
Okay. So for the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
you rarely see the diesel driven by the older retired guy that probably hauls his trailer. You rarely see that thing puff smoke, if ever.
Right.
But you get some young kid in there or young buck in there, and the light turns red, and maybe there's a four-cylinder Toyota next to him, and they take off fast. You see bellows of black smoke.
Right. Right.
On the regeneration part, where we're going to let the computer decide when to clean up the particulate filter.
Right.
Or how many of the newer model trucks from 2000 up, is there a process in the owner's manual for regeneration? Otherwise, we're going to force the computer to clean up the particulate filter because we have a check engine light or we have a low power problem.
None of them that the customer can do.
Okay. So this is strictly something the industry has to be involved in.
Yeah, you have to have some sort of a scanner or aftermarket device that will get it into regen.
Force it into regen,
okay. Yeah.
Now, if the other side is if it'll go 40, 50 miles an hour to get on the freeway and drive a half an hour or more at above 40 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, yes?
Should, yes, uh-huh.
So that
would do. A lot of times people encounter this when they're towing. And they'll call me. I mean, my aunt, your sister did the same thing. I said, you have to unhook the trailer. You have to unhook the trailer and drive it, get it to regen, and then hook it back up and go.
Okay, how do they know when it's regening?
Well, it'll throw it into. Usually they'll. I don't want to say usually. Sometimes they'll say it on the dash, but like if they come to a stop and it's elevated idle, it's regening.
Okay, in that process.
Yeah, sometimes it'll say on the some of the Duramaxes and the Fords, it'll say. Do not stop vehicle, exhaust system cleaning in progress or something like that. Or
Something on the message center.
Yeah, and don't ever shut it off during that period of time if you can help it.
Okay, so you're driving down the road, and if you want to know if it's in the regen process, because that's what you're trying to accomplish, could I just throw it into neutral at 60 miles an hour? And would I then see that the RPM, instead of being 800, is up to 1500?
I don't know the answer to that. Okay. I've never tried it that way. Okay. But typically, you'll start slowly regaining power back, too, as you start unclogging that filter, as it starts burning off that filter.
Okay. And is it a DEF issue? Because
no.
That started in 12, pretty much.
That started in 11.
Okay.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. It ended it. It's well, I think it started mandatory in all the trucks in 12.
No.
The last day of 12.
That's right. Yeah,
okay, but I think there was some diesel exhaust fluid. We're calling it DEF. The diesel exhaust fluid. There was a lot of trucks, but I don't know what brand that may have started 8 or 9.
Dodge
or
started
10.
Last. I know that.
Okay.
Dodge started last.
So Ford and Chevy were before that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And DEF. We're gonna the DEF, the diesel exhaust fluid, is kind of like lighter fluid on a barbecue. So the DEF goes in and lights the particulate filter.
No. It's an after treatment.
Okay.
DEF is an after treatment.
Okay.
So after the DPF is burned, it sprays that into the exhaust and neutralizes some, the flap agitator, triple pivot, swivel disc, and then it comes out clean.
Wait a minute. What was that?
It neutralizes the flip-flop agitator, triple pivot, swivel disc, and then somehow lubricates it and it comes out clean. I don't know what it does. And, I don't know what it does. It sprays urea into it and cleans out the...
Well, this is what I understand. When they got a nozzle, and I can't explain how this is supposed to work, but there's a nozzle, the DEF.
Injector.
Now, DEF has 49% or 48% deionized water. It has 40 urea. Urea is a liquid fertilizer. That's what we actually use urea for. But they're using urea, and it's approximately 50-50 with between urea and deionized water. It gets to this valve in front of the catalytic converter, and somehow it separates the water from the DEF, and it sprays it into catalyst, or the particulate filter, or the catalyst, and it helps fire up the catalyst. The DEF is kind of like a lighter fluid, and it helps light the particulate filter or the catalytic converter. Now, I read that. I don't know
true.
I read it in a trade magazine.
It's behind that because you had 4 years of DPFs that didn't have DEF.
I understand.
Yeah. No, it's behind the the DPF.
So we have the engine, and then it the goes cat. Into the cat.
Yep.
And then we go into the particulate filter.
Yep.
And then you're saying it's on the back side of the particulate filter.
Yes, I believe it's on the back side of the particulate, yes. Okay.
Well, somebody will correct us if we're wrong. Yeah. I guarantee you that. So the idea is the catalytic converter is usually red hot, and we're going to do something with the tailpipe emissions at the cat. The particulate filter is supposed to catch the soot, the solid soot, and under the best of condition, we're going to get that hot enough to dissolve that as well.
Yeah.
So did we ever have cats and no particulate filters?
No.
Okay, so they came together?
Yeah. Okay. Well, cat actually came years before the particulate filter came.
Okay, so we had cats a long time ago.
Yeah.
And the catalytic converter.
Yeah, cats started in, I think, 03.
Okay.
04, somewhere in there.
And this whole thing on a diesel is to eliminate a lot of, we don't care about the nitrogen, but we do care about the particulates, the soot that hasn't been consumed by the diesel engine.
Yeah.
All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you want to talk about diesels, and actually you can talk about tires. You can talk about aftermarket exhaust behind the particulate filter.
Correct.
And the stock pipe is normally what, and what can you go to?
Usually it's somewhere around 3 inches, 3.5 inches.
You can 3.5 inches in diameter.
Yep.
And then you can go to five?
4 or 5, yeah.
Okay, like 4 or 5. All righty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire and Auto Service. They have been open since 1976. They have 3 locations, 1 in Peoria, 1 Surprise, and 1 in Goodyear. They have a huge selections of tires, so when you go in there, they're going to look at your tire size, and then you can ask them good, better, or best. So they're going to give you an out-the-door price for the good tires, the better tires, and the best tires, because they have all 3 of those tires in stock, so you can pick any of the 3. Of course, they're going to balance your tires, and they do alignments and suspension work and oil changes and all that kind of stuff. But S&S Tire is really a good tire, and if you're in the West Valley, may I suggest that you stop by there. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Twenty minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and sitting next to me here is my son Alan Salem. He runs and owns a performance division and predominantly deals with diesels, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you also do some gas stuff because you were doing some blowers and stuff.
Yeah,
like
we have
that.
One this week actually. Yeah, we do a lot of gas stuff as well.
Tell me what you just said. We got one for next week. What is it?
Yeah, 2004 4Runner. We're doing a supercharger on.
Okay, so a supercharger basically takes the air that would normally be sucked into the engine, and a supercharger takes that air, compresses it, and forces it into the engine, which develops a lot more power.
Yeah, it's powered by a belt.
Okay, so it's powered by a belt as opposed to a turbocharger that is powered by the exhaust.
Yes.
So the supercharger, this is how I like to explain it. You have a vacuum cleaner. You got a suck on one end and an exit on the other.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So if we take the suck hose and we run it around to the exit, then we're not only sucking, but we're pushing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get a lot more air.
Volume of air, yeah.
Volume of air. Yep. So instead of having a cup of air, we've got 3 or 4 cups of air.
Yep, yep. And more air, then we add more fuel,
okay.
And then we make more power.
Okay. And emissions?
These are all carb legal, so.
Okay.
Yeah, these are all carb approved. As a matter of fact, with the Toyos, we don't even have to do any tuning on them. We just literally bolt them on and the parameters built in the computer will allow it to do it. We don't have to do any programming.
So it's going to match the air and the throttle angle and all that to a map that they have.
Yep.
The other guys, the map doesn't contain enough fuel to deliver to that engine. So then you have to reprogram the computer to just boost the level of fuel up.
To recognize stuff that's out of the realm of what they see normally.
Right.
Well, primarily a suction versus a pressure.
Right.
You know, they see a suction of the intake, and now all of a sudden they're seeing a pressure on the intake, and a lot of vehicles won't recognize that, where the Toyota in this case will.
And in the case of vacuum versus pressure, vacuum is a minus number, so to speak. So it goes, like a normal car is going to idle at 18 inches of vacuum. That's suck.
Right.
But then you're going to add 5-6 pounds of boost to that.
Pressure.
And so all of a sudden the computer thinks that we've got a low vacuum and determines that you're on the D cell, and so it shuts off the fuel.
Right.
So, all righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel is a good place. That's way up north. And it's not way up north. It's I-17 and Pinnacle Peak.
Way up north to us.
To us, yeah, because we're way south. But anyway, they are die-hard diesel service, repair, and parts guys. They work on foreign, domestic, and here's the keywords, light diesel trucks. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, Strictly Diesel service and repair. Monday through Friday, they're open, but on weekends, you can go to their website, and 24 hours a day on their website, they sell parts, and so you can look and compare whatever parts that you might look for. Strictly Diesel service and repair. Okay, so you do lots of tire conversions.
Yeah, wheel and tire conversions, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to change the diameter or the circumference of the tire.
Right.
And so...
And the wheel, usually.
Okay.
Usually.
But the offset will kind of stay the same, so the tire's wider, but it'll still it's not going to hang out the outside of the fender.
Well, some people like that, but we typically don't.
Okay. And so the tires and wheels that everybody installs, it's a matter of the truck can carry 8,000 pounds, and you're not going to drop below that. Otherwise, each one of the tires on an 8,000-pound truck better carry 2,000 pounds.
Right.
Oftentimes, when you go upsize, you're going to get 2,500 pounds
mm-hmm.
or 2,600. There's no problem because at 2,500 pounds of tire, all of a sudden you're holding, you got 10,000 pounds of tires underneath the truck that's going to max weigh at 8,000.
Right.
So there's no harm, no foul.
Right.
What about the speed rating of those bigger tires? How does it compare to the tires that came on it?
I don't know, to be real honest with you. I mean, I know that they're as good or better because I can't think if they have a speed rating on light truck stuff.
Yeah, I don't know that, to be honest, either.
I don't know.
But on the speed rating, there's typically a letter.
Yeah.
And the letter's going to tell you how fast the tire is built for.
Yeah.
What's the lowest speed rating you've ever seen? I think 65. There's no speed rating for 65. That might be, for instance, that might be an A.
Yeah.
So, I mean, every tire is going to
I don't know what the number is. Yeah, I'm not sure.
But you can get into the S, the T, and then the V, and I think the V at this point is the highest tire.
W is actually higher than even ZR.
Okay.
From my understanding, it's now
it's
a W.
W. And that's 149 plus.
Yeah.
Okay, that you have a set of those on
think,
your mother's
I think Z is actually 149 plus, and then W encompasses something larger. I don't remember what
larger.
It is.
Okay, like, I don't know the answer, but I did look it up the other day because somebody asked me about that.
Yeah.
So the issue is 140 a tire that's 149 miles an hour and faster, it'll hold together. How many of those cars aren't the computer controls the top end speed? And many times you're going to find out that they have a 93 or 95 mile an hour limit. And yeah. We start shutting off the fuel at 90, somewhere in the 90s.
I would say a good amount of them.
Okay. And that seems to be something that's pretty predominant where the car manufacturers are trying to control
I'm
the
sorry,
speed.
I said W, I meant Y.
Okay.
So you've got W is up to 168.
Up to. Okay.
Then Y is up to 186. ZR is up to 149. But then Y with exclamation points, mm-hmm. Parentheses, yeah. is up to 186. So they've got stuff now up to 186, which is... Y is actually 186.
Does your mother's car have Y on it?
Yeah. So does Heather's van.
Oh, God. We can tease the girls all we want because they're probably out shopping.
That's right.
So we can talk about them. But it's a good idea that you put my wife and your mother's tires on there because there are times that she's probably going a little faster than the law would allow.
Right.
So anyway. If
We don't, though.
Yeah, we don't.
No.
Yeah, we never do. 602-508-0960 if you have a question about tires and wheels, if you have a question about diesels, if you have a question about programmers. Now, what's the difference between a chip and a programmer?
Chip is what they used in some of the older stuff, the TBI stuff where you would take a PROM out of a computer and reflash that PROM, and it's actually a little piece of hardware that plugs onto the PCM board. Then you have modules, which are they unplug under the hood. You'll unplug vital engine
components,
readings, yeah, boost sensor, fuel pressure sensor, you know, stuff like that, and you plug in line. So basically, it's It's changing. It's modifying that signal back to the PCM, and the PCM is overcompensating. And then they also have programmers which actually go in and reflash the PCM to a different to different settings.
A chip seems to me it's going to move the number from 6 to a 7 or an 8. Period. It's just going to move that number.
Setting.
Right. But on a programmer, you can mess with the settings. You can change a 6 to a 10.
Yeah.
Or something like that, because you've got this handheld device.
Right.
But in reality, there's still some parameters they're not going to let you go. They're not going to let you run raw fuel out the tailpipe. If the motor's not going to consume it, we're not going to let you just turn the faucet wide open.
Right.
And that's the whole trick of it is. Now, if your foot's on the floor, and you're going down the highway by yourself and you're doing it legally, foot's on the floor, you open the faucet and you keep opening the faucet, you'll gain speed, but there'll come a time where you open that faucet another eighth of a turn and you'll go from 150 to 149.
Yeah.
You've just reached trim. That's exactly. So any more fuel past that number is a waste of fuel.
Right.
So you're just kind of consuming every bit that you're delivering to the engine.
You want to be as efficient as possible.
Efficient. But efficient doesn't match with fuel economy and stuff like that.
Right.
Because if you get more power, you're using more fuel. And if you're using more fuel, economy and efficiency isn't.
I don't know about all that.
Why?
I would disagree with that. Do we have to take a break? We can argue about it afterwards.
It doesn't make any sense if, I'll have the last word. If you want more power, you're going to use more fuel, and then efficiency goes down the tube.
That's not true.
Okay. All righty. Well, 602-508-0960, and we'll have that argument when we get back. 602-508-0960.
Monster with the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Welcome back, everybody. Let me push the right button. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. If you have a question, 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repair is at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair, since the early 80s. Back then, he worked on engine analyzers, and if you all remember, we used to talk about, put my car on the big box, and it'll tell you what's wrong with it. Tom was part of that group at the very beginning, and he worked for one of them, Allen Equipment, and then I think later he worked for Bear. And those were the two Chevy and Ford kind of guys that had those big, huge boxes. But Tom's a good guy. He knows cars really well. He's honest. He's dependable. He's not going to sell you something that you don't need. He served Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area since 1983, and he has a ESC Master Certified Technicians, and he has a BMW Big Dog. Guy knows BMWs really, really well. So if you're looking for an aftermarket shop for your BMW, I-17 and Deer Valley Northwest corner is Action Auto Supply. Okay, big dog, little dog, grasshopper. We're arguing about if you add more fuel. I'm saying if you add more fuel to get more power, you lose fuel economy. And you're saying?
I'm saying, first of all, this doesn't apply to gas motors.
Okay.
I'm talking strictly diesels here.
I didn't know we were doing that. Okay, but I'll see if I can defend my position.
But these diesels are detuned so much from the factory. These same Cummins that are in our trucks are rated at 500 horsepower in a marine application.
Okay.
Okay.
What's the stock Cummins?
360.
Okay.
340, 360, something like that.
Is that the new 6.7s
you're talking about? Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
This is the last couple years.
Yeah. Okay. Last couple years. So in the marine applications, when you take those restrictions off by using a programmer, what you're adding more timing, you're adding more fuel, you're adding more duration, the truck has more power. It is absolutely 100% not uncommon, and this goes on your truck too, for you to get better fuel economy when adding a programmer.
Okay.
100%.
And I can't speak to that because when I picked up my truck in Pittsburgh,
yeah,
and I drove it home and I handed you the keys.
Right.
And I said to you, make my truck as fast as yours.
Right.
And what'd you do?
Well, we did a bunch of stuff.
Okay. I know, but did you make my truck as fast as yours?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Yes, you did.
How come I had to hunt for your grandmother's repair bill that you hit?
No, yours is done the exact same as mine.
Okay. All right. Well, whose would win a quarter mile?
Well, mine weighs less.
Oh, okay. So you'd win?
Probably. Well, for sure.
Okay. Would yours outpull me if we put like a chain between the two bumpers?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not, just because you have four tires on the ground.
No, I have six.
Well, yeah, in the back, yeah.
Okay. All right, just want to make sure there's something.
But it's not uncommon to get
better fuel economy. All right. Define better fuel economy. 1, 2, 3 miles to the gallon better?
You know, we've had people as much as 5.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, it's since the introduction of all this emissions stuff, it is vastly different now with all that emissions stuff, because that just kills your fuel economy regardless of what happens. But your earlier models, your pre-2008s, it's not uncommon to see 3 to 5 almost instantaneously.
Okay. And I didn't have a chance on my truck to determine what was.
Right.
But my 1 ton running back and forth to Payson,
2 minutes.
I am easy in the 14 to 17 mile an hour range, depending on if I'm pulling the horse trailer or something else, and depending on how stupid I am.
Right.
So. Right.
Now, there gets to a point where those lines intersect. I mean, if you're on the throttle 100% of the time at 100%, then, yeah, it's going to, you know, those lines intersect at some point. But if you, I run my truck at the highest setting, and I drive it, you know, reasonably, then I get much, much better fuel economy.
Okay.
I'm up in the low 20s.
Okay. And basically, this the faucet. Because you're dialing in as much fuel, you can probably back off the throttle a little bit to maintain the same amount.
Yeah.
So you're kind of closing the faucet off under those circumstances.
You're closing the faucet off, but you're spraying it for longer. You're spraying it for at a higher pressure to atomize the fuel better. But you're also spraying it at a different time. The timing of when it does that, all of that contributes to taking the restrictions off of these motors, because like I say, these motors, strictly by tuning it, the motors side by side are 100% the same as a marine application, but they run 500 horse. It's strictly programming.
But you can take the extreme, and you can take these motors into a track kind of a thing and build 1,000 horsepower.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And they would do that by put twin turbos on it instead of
twin
one.
Turbos and giant injectors and giant pumps and sure.
And the injector normally looks like a spray nozzle for your misting system on your patio.
Yeah, they have usually four to six little tiny, you can't even see them with the naked eye, holes in them.
Okay.
And what they'll do is, what we've been doing a lot of is, and it works really well, is when we order new injectors, we order them 15% over.
Okay.
So they take a hair. And they call it extrude hone, and they pull that hair through, and it makes it 15% over, which is still invisible to the naked eye, but it sprays 15% more fuel. And just that little bit, without even a programmer, truck idles better, the truck runs better.
And you can back off the throttle and you don't use as much fuel.
Yep.
But my point was, is the injector looks like a mist in your misting system.
Yeah.
And on these 1,000 horsepowers, it looks like a fire hose.
Oh, yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There's a big difference on how we're going to spray the fuel and what the pressure is. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you want to join us, you can. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem and Alan Salem here, and we're arguing. This is father-son kind of argument, and we're arguing about cars and trucks. And I have 39 years of experience, and you have somewhere around 15 to 20
months. Yeah, 15. Yeah, yeah.
15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were talking about power and performance. 602-508-0960 if you want to join us. We're going to just finish this argument. We're talking about fuel, power and fuel
efficiency.
Okay, efficiency. Okay, well, fine. Do your side again, and I'll do my side.
Well, I just say that you know, to a certain point, you can. I'm speaking to diesels here. You can add fuel, add power, and get better fuel economy. There is a limit to that. Where the lines intersect, but for the most part, we can get much better fuel economy.
All right, I'm going to draw them a picture. You're looking at a big X.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And where the X's cross is the middle.
Yep.
Okay? So we can boost your power, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to boost your fuel economy and your emissions and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But we can also boost your power, and we can drop that intersection of the X down below.
Yep.
Now, I think it has a lot to do with, if you have more power, you're going to use less throttle. So if you're doing a cruise control at 70 miles an hour, one truck may use have a TPS value in an exaggeration.
Sure.
A TPS value of 3.5, and a truck that has a programmer might be 3.1
yep.
or 2.9.
Yep.
So that just tells you where the throttle's at.
Yep.
Now, Eddie, who's sitting here next to me, is a Ford guy. I liked what he said. He said it's the difference between a four-cylinder Honda and a six-cylinder Honda. He said the four-cylinder Honda is going up the mountain, and he's deeper into the throttle than the six-cylinder is.
Because he has less power
right.
overall.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a nice way to put it to where the V6 is going to get better fuel economy because he's less into the throttle than the four-cylinder that's working its butt off to haul, you know, guys like you. And
Now, if you take that six-banger and you're running it, you know, at 100 miles an hour up the hills and stuff like that, that's where the lines intersect, where it's going to get worse economy than the – but if, you know, side by side, 70 miles an hour, you're going to pay, you're going to get better with the six
cruise cylinder. Control.
Cruise control. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Floorboarded, the six cylinder is going to get right. there a day before the four cylinder.
But it's also going to use a lot more fuel.
All righty. Right. Let's go to Harry. Harry, what do you got to say?
Well, I got to agree with you, Mark. You got to kind of keep the young whippersnappers in line there a little bit.
You know, it's whippersnappers or I like to call him Grasshopper. You know, from the old Karate Kid.
Okay, I'll do that.
Although he's not necessarily the size
of. I've seen him. I'm 6'3" and he's taller than I am.
I know.
He's a big boy.
I know.
He'll be careful.
Well, we'll find out who his father is someday. But right now, he doesn't fit the mold for the rest of the family. He's got 6 inches on the rest of the family. Oh boy,
he's a big boy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is.
Hey, I got two questions.
Okay.
One, you were talking about tires and the speed rating number or letter on them. How come they don't, on trailer tires, have that speed rating, too?
They do. And we argued about this the other day.
Yeah, we just had this argument. Yeah.
We had a big argument. I almost fired him.
No, it wasn't between us.
I know. I'm just teasing.
Someone had said that there was one, and I hadn't seen one, but they're actually some of the trailer. Now, I don't know if it's all of them or what, but the ones that we looked at all had speed ratings on them.
Okay, now what we're talking about is I've always said that a speed rating on an ST tire, standard trailer tire,
right,
65
right.
miles an hour. This friend of ours from Texas called us, and he had this trailer that he hauls motorcycles from Kerrville, Texas to Dallas. The other way around. He picks up motorcycles in Dallas, quads and stuff like that, and he drives to Kerrville. And I said, I don't know that we can find it. And the trailer had 10,000 pounds and it only had 4 tires.
And they were like 15 inch.
Yeah, they were 15 inch. So our concern was, is the best we can do is 2,000 a tire. And then if it's 2,000 a tire, then we only have 8,000 pounds of tires underneath the trailer that you're going to load to 10 or more. Then he calls back and he says he found a trailer tire that was like 3,200 or 3,300 pounds, and he also found this trailer tire did 75 or 80 miles an hour.
Yep.
And I called his bluff. I said, I've never heard of that before, and I ended up eating my words because I went to Alan, and he has this computer on his desk that's second to nothing, and he pulls up just every tire manufacturer in the world, and lo and behold, we found those tires he was talking about. And they're, in no other words, heavy-duty trailer tires.
Yeah, I hadn't even seen them before, you know, either. I mean, they held an exceptional amount of weight.
But they were twice as much as a regular trailer tire or more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they weren't rated.
When I had a travel trailer.
I mean, they weren't
a travel trailer. I had those ST-205s or 215 Badger tires, and every trip I would blow one.
Yeah.
And, of course, I did drive a tad over 65, so that could be the
well.
Problem,
but, and that and your wife.
The early ones, I didn't have that problem. I couldn't quite understand when they had them rated at 2,000, then they came out with supposedly an updated one that was 2,150, and I had more trouble with those. Of course, each country of manufacturer had changed. Once was the United States, Canada, Australia, and then of course China.
Yeah.
So
no, you're right.
I kind of attributed.
Well, I think the difference, too, is you and I have known one another for years and years, and I think that your beer and your trailer has grown a lot because of your wife, and
now,
I think...
Wait a minute, I gotta get on you about that because you kind of educated me to the fact to make sure you weigh your trailer and your truck and all that, so I weighed my trailer, and it came in at just about 100 pounds over max, fully... You know, loaded with water and, you know, and all the stuff in it. So I was within specs and everything. And I started, like I say, I changed tires after about 3 years, 4 years, and went to the newer ones. Boy, that's when I had having more trouble. The first 4 years, I didn't have a bit of trouble.
Well, we see,
but then when I started using the newer ones, I did.
Yeah, we see a lot of the newer tires, the newer model tires. I don't think they've refined them yet. I think they're using their R&D is the public. The public is their R&D. So let's throw this tire out there, and we'll learn from our mistakes. I think that happens on newer model tires.
I think every year it seems like we're changing tires, trailer tires, because they all just suck. I mean, no matter what it is, wherever we can, we put LTs on them, and then we'll try, you know, we'll run a set of X brands, and then we'll start having blowouts a year and a half later. I mean, the best thing I can tell you is if you change them, if they're STs, change them every 2 years, regardless, and I mean, that's really the best thing.
And another thing, too, is I have P tires, passenger car tires, on my red trailer.
Yeah.
And so I've got, I don't know, I got 10,000 pounds of tires underneath an 8,000-pound trailer.
Yeah.
A gross. The trailers can only hold 8,000, and I got 10,000 pounds of tires. But, Harry, the ST, a standard trailer, the next one up in strength and durability and speed, is a P tire, a passenger car tire. Then Alan talked about an LT tire, which is a light truck tire. So, but on 15-inch, you're not going to find a whole lot of light truck tires.
That's the problem I ran into.
Yeah.
So, that's what I ran into. And then if you went to a 16, you had clearance problems, and you basically had to put your
spacer
blocks under your springs to get more clearance.
That's what we run into all the time,
yep. Well, that 100 pounds, Harry, is just the makeup case for your wife. So just tell her to leave some of her clothes home and some of her makeup case, and you'll be home free.
She's in the other room listening, buddy. You're going to be getting it. She's going to be calling Renee, and they're going to be getting with some bad vibes on you, buddy.
Because commiserating is what the word I think. I can't spell it, but I can sure say it. All righty. Thank you, Harry. Thank you very much.
One other question I had, too.
Oh, go.
I have one other question. On your diesel, you were talking, your son was talking about getting, 500 horsepower out of the marine ones. And car ones are only like 350.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you think that's because they wanted to get more longevity, when it's still under warranty?
Let me guess, and then you can guess after me. I think that a marine engine probably in its entire life may not go 50,000 miles, and some of these diesels will do 300,000 miles. And one of the things we're going to make them run longer is we're going to warm them up more, and obviously something on a lake in a boat's going to be different. And we're going to warm them up more and hotter, and then I think they go 400,000 miles. Alan, you're up.
Emissions.
Period. Is it emissions?
Yeah, because they detune these things and then add a ton of emission products on top of it to keep the air clean. Whereas in a marine application, they don't have any emissions on them.
Okay, and don't they run the exhaust through the water?
Yeah.
And so you got the ocean to drop these particulate filters
into the water.
The water.
So you're both. By the removal of the they don't care about, quote unquote, care about emissions in marine applications. So they ditch all the stuff and pump them up a little bit.
Okay, all right. So Harry, if you want a hot rod motor, go buy a boat and we'll take it out of that and put it in your truck.
No, we won't.
I had one of those, the two best days when you have a boat is when you buy it, when you sell
That's
it.
That's right.
You got that right. All righty, Harry. Thank you very much, buddy. Thank you. All righty. Well, 602-508-0960. We're going to come back with another hour, and we're going to bring the extraordinary Ford guy, the guy that knows more about Fords than anybody I've ever met.
And lawnmowers and wagons and go-karts and motorcycles and
we're
air
talking
conditioning units. And
MacGyver. You know what he said to me?
Huh.
He says, I was over at your house the other day by the barn, and I said, I was out of town.
Yeah.
And he goes, what are you doing? He goes, well, the faucet was leaking.
Yeah.
And he says, so I went over there and sweated on a new faucet.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why didn't you do that?
I didn't know about it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know about it.
All right. But anyway, he is a MacGyver.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing we can't give him that he can't figure out. The thing that really bothers me the most is that you put that Ford Galaxy or Fairlane in the number one West Side hoist. And it's grown roots. Because you couldn't get the special tires and wheels, and it's been now how long?
Oh, 6 weeks.
6 weeks we've had a hoist tied up with a really pretty Galaxy. What is it, a Galaxy or a Fairlane?
500. Galaxy
500. And it's not Eddie's fault, but it's
no,
yours.
No, it isn't. It's my fault. It's my fault. I messed that one up. And, yeah, I know. It could be worse. It could be some piece of...
Okay, I'll save you from that. Just all right, folks, this is what the deal is. Is we take this Galaxy and we completely change the suspension, the hubs. We put disc brakes all the way around. We do exhaust work. We do fuel injection, I think, right? We put install fuel injection. And so because we changed the lug pattern, we couldn't put the old tires and wheels back on it and roll it outside. So now we're stuck with this big, you know, if you don't get that off that hoist pretty soon, I'm going to plant flowers in the back seat. And we'll just have this beautiful little rose garden out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what happens when you're doing reconstructing of cars, is every once in a while you run into a pickle like this where you have to wait for a part to be made or you have to find one. And we have the best parts department in the world, but those guys can find anything. Eddie, real quick, what kind of car was that that we had to find a water pump for?
Packard.
A Packard. And those guys were able to find, first of all, the OEM part number. Then they searched with that, and they found a Packard. What year? He don't have a microphone on. You remember what year that was?
49.
A 49 Packard that we found a water pump for.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're pretty proud of our parts department because Sean and what's the other guy's name?
Jeff.
Yeah, I know. I'm just teasing him if he's listening.
I was going to say something else. But what we call him, but anyway.
Yeah, anyway. So 602-508-0960, because when we come back in about 4 or 5 minutes, then if you have a car question, you can. Especially if you have a car question about Fords. And if you want to, and one of the questions I'm going to ask Eddie at the very beginning is, what's the difference between a Fairlane and a Galaxy? And he'll have the answer. And then I'm going to ask him a whole bunch of Mustang questions just to test his ability. When the six-cylinder came out, when it went away, and all that other kind of stuff. So I think Eddie's been with me 29 years. And I hired him before he even had any whiskers. I hired him when he still had to go to school and then show up later after he got out of school at 3 o'clock.
Really? Is that? Oh, I was going to say. I didn't think of
what?
Well, I didn't think you were still in school at that point. 30 years ago?
No, let me tell you real quick. I interviewed him, and I was asking him,
have you heard this story?
Well, can I tell it to the rest of
us? I know. Yeah, you can.
All right. I said, have you ever done this? Have you ever pulled a transmission? Have you ever done a clutch? And he's talking, yeah. And he's yawning. He's yawning. And he's going, oh, you're bothering me.
Yeah.
So have you ever done a Quadrajet? Have you ever done a Holley? Have you ever done this? Have you ever done that? And he says yes to everything. So I hire him. And later, years later, I recognized that he had so much self-confidence that I was boring him.
Right.
He had all the skills, he said. He's one of the few people I've hired. I have a lot of great guys. But he's one of the few people I've interviewed that was... And now I recognize
as good as they thought they were.
Yeah. But I recognize self-confidence. He's the only one in 30 years that was yawning during my my interview. And kind of shaking his head like, boy, these are stupid questions. Who hasn't done that?
Yeah.
So it was just it was a lesson for me. You learn from your lessons. And that's what you should do, according to your mothers. Learn from your lessons.
That's right.
And your wife. Your wife was talking to you the other day. And she was saying something about you misbehave?
Yeah.
Yeah? Is she right or wrong?
No, come on. I don't do that. Ask Eddie. Ask Eddie at work next hour.
Okay. You don't misbehave?
I behave like a flower.
A flower?
Yeah, like a beautiful flower.
I certainly wouldn't use that as an adjective. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We'll be back with another hour of car fun and frivolity. We'll be back. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. The name of this show is Under the Hood. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we talk about cars and your cars. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. My guest this hour is Eddie Caruso, who's been a master tech for how long?
Since, I think I got my master in 1990.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't remember when mine was. But I think I've been 26, 27, 28 years, I think. So Eddie has worked for us for 29 years. Folks, there's lots of shops in town that do lots of kind of work, but one of the things that Eddie does is older cars. So I'm gonna get right to the question I asked before the end of the break. What's the difference between a Ford Fairlane and a Ford Galaxy, and what years are we bracketing here?
Well, the Fairlane came out in the mid-50s. Okay. I'm trying to think when the Galaxy came out. It might have come out a little bit later. The Galaxy is classified as a full-size, okay, where the Fairlane is what Ford would call an intermediate.
Okay. All right. How about drivetrain? Same drivetrain or different?
They shared a lot of the same drivetrains. You can get the same engine and transmissions in them, although on the Galaxy being a full-size, you had more of a options for big blocks in those than you did the Fairlanes.
Okay. And, folks, the big block and a small block is just the size of the engine. A 350, a 327, a 360 Ford, those are all small blocks.
Yes.
And then the big blocks, I'll do the Chevrolet. The big blocks is the 348 and north of that. And so the 400, the 427, the 454.
Yeah, well, the 400 is still classified as a small block in the Chevy.
Okay.
It's a stroke 350.
Okay.
You're talking 396, 454, 427.
Okay. Okay. All right. And so the small block Fords, or the big block Fords?
427, 428, 460.
Okay. So the difference is really the cubic inches, and that line's probably somewhere around the 400 cubic inches.
And they had different classifications for the blocks. They had the Y blocks back in the 50s and the 60s, and then the 428s and the 460s were the FE blocks, the 390s.
What's the difference between the Y and the FE?
It's just the configuration. Like, say, a 460 has a intake manifold that bolts onto the heads, whereas the 390s, the 360s, half of the intake was half of the rocker sealing area, so it's almost half of the cylinder head itself, the top half of the cylinder head.
Okay, all right. So the Galaxy, I think that's a Galaxy on your rack.
Yes.
Okay, and what was it that you were charged to do with that?
Well, the first time it came in is when we took the carburetor off of it and put a fuel injection system on it.
Okay, and so there's more to just unbolting the carburetor and the fuel injection, right?
Right.
Did you do any programming?
It's a self-learning program on that.
Okay.
So there's a handheld device that you plug into it. It's got about the size of your cell phone.
Okay.
And so you punch in the number of cylinders, the cubic inch displacement, and automatic or standard transmission. And it basically will run the engine for a couple minutes. It'll have you, you know, go from idle to wide open throttle, and then it kind of learns as it runs the engine, learns the parameters. It's got an oxygen sensor, so it can tell the fuel trims.
Okay.
It's a self-learning system.
Okay, and just for those folks out there, an oxygen sensor is in the exhaust system, and it's a tattletale. It tells the engine when you're sending too much fuel out of the tailpipe, and when it senses that there's not enough fuel. So it can help the computer control the faucet, the fuel faucet. If you're running too rich, shut it down. If you're running too lean, open it up in simplistic terms.
Right.
Okay. So this thing, could you do that while the car was sitting in the bay?
The programming?
The learning,
yes.
Just
yes.
Sitting there?
Yeah.
Okay. So after you drove it, now, in the old cars, they didn't necessarily, some of them we adapted, some of them did, they didn't have an air conditioning kicker. So you want to idle at 600 RPM and drive. If you turned on the air, it went to 500.
Right.
So the fuel injection cars see the air come on and they kick the idle up.
It has an input for an AC compressor clutch. So we can see if you have the lower the air conditioning on. It sees, hey, I've got an incoming from AC, so I'm going to bump the idle speed up 50, 75, or bring it back to its controlled idle speed.
Okay, so that is how this computer got the input. All right. And which is pretty much like every other computer, every other computerized car.
Right.
Now, some of them are going to see the load and the RPM drop. So maybe the computer says, I want you to idle 600. Maybe the computer sees, it just went to 500. And it doesn't know why it went to 500, but it says, okay, well, I'm going to take it back up to 600. So maybe a load on some of them?
Yes, and that's how this one does it for the idle in gear.
Okay.
So it may be idling at 650 in neutral. And then you drop it into gear, it doesn't have an input from the transmission to see that you've come out of park into drive. It sees the RPM drops, it sees the load go up, and as smart as these computers are, it says, hey, well, let's see, RPM went down, load went up, wheels aren't turning, I don't have a vehicle speed input, I must be in gear, okay, let's bump the idle speed up a little bit.
And that, it took you 10 seconds to describe that, but this computer's in the blink of an eye.
Yes, nanoseconds.
Okay. So it's just something that just happens before you can even see it happen.
Yes.
So did you go drive it afterwards?
Yes.
And did you drive it before with a carburetor on it?
Yes.
Okay, so give us the difference.
Okay, before with the carburetor, cold start, pump the throttle 3 times.
Okay.
Fire it up. It would come up to about, maybe 1,500 RPM, just kind of sitting there, blah, 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 blah.
Which is what a carburetor should do.
When it's on the choke.
Yeah, when you pump it 1 or 2 or 3 times on a cold car, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's okay. Even though I signed the front of your paycheck. And
Andy does.
Andy does, and my daughter does, you're right. And so the first pump is to close the choke, and right. The subsequent pump is the accelerator pump, not flooding, but squirting fuel into the engine.
Right.
Fuel injections don't have to do that.
No, well, they have a little bit of fuel enrichment
okay.
when they're cold.
And what you're talking about is the nozzle, the sprayers, they stay on for a little longer.
Right.
The duration, instead of a psst, it's a psst. In an exaggerated form.
Right.
Okay. So you don't have to pump the throttle on a fuel injection. So after you started it up with a choke, it's going to da-da-da-da-da-da, which is normal.
Right. And it runs like that for about 5 seconds, and all of a sudden it'll slowly pick up as the choke starts up a little bit, and we get more air in there, and next you know it's idling at 1,700 RPM.
Okay.
Let it run for 10 seconds. Blip the throttle. We should take it down to the next step on the fast idle cam. So you went from 1,700 down to about 1,300. Pop it into gear and away you go.
And that's pretty much across the board on all the old cars that have carburetors.
Yes, unless they have a manual choke.
Okay, and with the exception of a manual choke, they all... Now, how many people in the world do you think know how to set a choke on a carbureted car?
I don't know how many techs there are now that actually worked on carburetors.
I know that. I make fun. I say to people all the time, your technician better have gray hair if you're asking him to work on an old car.
Yes.
Because the young bucks have no clue. They've never worked on a car that had a carburetor. They don't understand that. But they're probably very good on the computerized cars. But when it comes to carbureted and manual timing and an HEI distributor and a EC3 system, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So in this particular case, you're converted from a carburetor. How did it run?
Great. Started up. I mean, just hit the key, and in a second, it started up, it's running, it's idling smooth.
Okay.
Out on the road, throttle response was nice and crisp. There was no bogging, no hesitation.
Okay. Now, it has a throttle position sensor, which tells the computer what your foot's doing on the throttle.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about the inputs. So it has a throttle position
yes.
sensor, and so it sees you hit the throttle, whether you go from zero to wide open throttle, it sees that.
Yes.
It immediately turns on the fuel and the timing.
Right.
Okay, and we know it has an input for the air conditioning compressor.
Yes.
So it knows when you turn on the air. So when you go from 600 to 500, it'll take you back to 600.
Correct.
What other inputs?
Coolant temp sensor.
Okay, now the coolant temp sensor is going to tell it that when the temperature of the coolant, so if the engine's cold, it's going to bring the idle up.
Right.
Because it knows the engine's cold. Now, was that the same coolant sensor, or did you have to drill a hole in the manifold, or what'd you do?
It was a different sensor, but it used the same port. So you take the original coolant temp sender out.
Okay.
And put the coolant temp sensor in there, and then you move the coolant temp sender to a different spot on either on the intake or the throttle or the thermostat housing, so it runs the gauge on the dash.
Okay. So a sender is talking to somebody like the gauge.
Correct.
And a sensor is talking to the computer.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in the newer model cars, it can be the same.
It can be the same. They'll run it through the BCM and different modules, and they can split that signal. One goes to the ECM for fuel control. The other might go to the what we call the IPC, the instrument panel cluster, for the gauge.
Okay. All right. And so what else? You had a coolant, TPS, and you had
oxygen sensor.
Oh, you have an oxygen sensor.
Yeah.
All right. So that goes in the exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have to... Is there a pipe that it comes with it where you channel that in? Or
on this one, there are a couple different options. There was one where you could drill a hole into the exhaust pipe, and there was not quite a half-moon flange that the oxygen sensor bolted into, and then you could clamp that onto the exhaust pipe.
Okay.
Or you could drill a hole and put what's called a bung in there, weld it onto the exhaust, and then screw the oxygen sensor into that.
And the bung's like a big nut that's threaded.
Right.
And you're going to screw the oxygen sensor into the big nut that's threaded after you tack welded or welded onto
right.
the exhaust. And now the oxygen sensor is in the exhaust stream, and it tells the computer whether the faucet's open too far or too little.
Well, it tells us more about what's coming out after it comes out of the combustion chamber.
But it does that in a way that it's saying to the carburetor, it's saying to the fuel injection system, I see way too much fuel.
Right.
And the response by the computer is shut down the fuel.
Right.
Okay, so there's a talk back and forth, again, in the blink of an eye.
Yes.
Okay. So what else? Oxygen sensor, coolant.
Yeah, TPS. That was TPS. It had a MAP sensor that was integral to the throttle body, so that would sense the load on the engine based on the vacuum that's in the intake manifold.
Okay, so when you're idling, let's pretend you're at 18 inches of vacuum. Oh, boy. If we were on television right now, oh, boy. My son just came to the back door of the radio studio and did something very stupid, but I won't describe it. Nevertheless, where was I at?
1 minute.
We
were talking about vacuum and idle.
Okay, vacuum and idle is 18 inches, and if you just throttle up gently, it goes 17, 16, 15, 14, and it just depending on how deep you go with the throttle.
Right.
If you go wide open, it goes from 18 to zero.
Correct.
And so the computer needs that input.
Right.
And in that particular case, it's part of the air going through the engine. So
yes.
If it sees a little bit of air, the throttle blades are closed. We should be idle. If it sees a whole bunch of air, then all of a sudden we know you're
vacuum
wide open.
Drops, TPS goes up.
Exactly. Okay. Now, compare that to a newer model car today. How many inputs does it have? How many inputs?
Way too many. I couldn't even name them all right
okay.
now.
Okay. But fair enough. Would you say that there's 30 or more?
I would say 30 is a pretty good figure.
Okay. I would say 30 plus or minus. I would say 30 to 50 because we have sensors to who sits in the stupid seat and how much they weigh. We have sensors all over the car that tells us if a bulb is out. We have a sensor for the suspension. We have four ABS sensors or wheel sensors that talk to the ABS as well as the tire pressure monitoring system. All of that stuff. I mean, we could go through, but I doubt both of us together couldn't come up with all the sensors on a new car.
No, that'd be like trying to name every code a car can throw.
And then the last but not least, we're going to take a break, but last but not least, here's something that's interesting. When you have a code that says the oxygen sensor is involved, changing the oxygen sensor is like killing the messenger many times.
Yes.
Because the oxygen sensor is simply reporting what it sees, and what's wrong is upstream. And so the oxygen sensor is telling us the truth, but the guys at the auto parts store sell you an O2 sensor. But what you're doing is you're shooting the messenger.
Right.
So you put that on, and guess what you have?
Same problem.
And your wallet's a little bit less weight. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, sitting next to me, and I'm a master technician, and Eddie Caruso is also a master technician, and Eddie's worked for us for 29 years, and we're just talking about old Fords, because that's Eddie's really forte, Fords in general, but Packards,
Bentleys, what are some of the other ones I had?
I
had the 56 Thunderbird, 71 Charger. Had a lot of the old ones coming lately.
Yeah, a lot of old ones. We've been packed with a lot of old ones. Nevertheless, that's what we're talking about. If you'd like to join, if you have a question, I think one of us can answer it, or both of us can answer it, or we can argue in front of you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. A good shop in town is Auto Dynamics. It's in Sun City. It's the largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services, and it's been around since 1982. I've known Chuck Nyday since 1968. His son, Derek, is running the operation right now, and Derek is one of those guys you wish your daughter would bring home. He is that kind of young man. He's just a very, very smart and dynamic guy. So he's decided to, his staff and his mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill. He can ensure them that they don't sell you unnecessary parts or repair. We're all watching this to see how it works out because it's a good idea. The question is what negative ramifications is this going to create? Nevertheless, Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Where were we talking?
We were talking about sensors and stuff on vehicles.
Right. In the newer model cars, 30 to 50 different sensors talk to the computer. Climate control sensors, whether we need to defrost your windows or whatever.
Right.
Right? There's how many sensors are in the shift part of this car? You've got drive or park, reverse, the lights, neutral, and, and then you've got all the gears. One, two, three, and then let's go with overdrive and lockup.
Right.
So we got most cars have only one, two, three, but really they have five speeds.
Correct.
So to speak. So to speak. So all these sensors, but this fuel injection system you put on this, what year's Galaxy was?
65.
65 Galaxy is a real basic, but it's still going to provide good emissions because it has an oxygen sensor.
Yes.
So it's going to be cleaner now than it ever was before.
Correct.
No questions.
No questions.
You could bet your life on it. And not, but it has a better cold start, better fuel economy.
More power.
More power, more performance. Is now, I know that you wouldn't have done it because it's a customer's cars of ours, but had that been a Galaxy of yours and you put fuel injection on it, before, how long would it burn the tires? And now, how long would it burn the tires?
I would say before, maybe halfway through first gear, it would burn them.
Okay. And after?
As long as I want to keep my foot down.
No, we're not advocating that you do that, but that's in the absence of visuals on radio, we can only describe with words. And so it enhances the vehicle. Now, approximately, give me a square box of what it costs to put that on, parts and labor.
I would say $3,000 to $4,500.
Okay. And it depends a lot on what system.
Right.
And what's the condition of the present motor.
Correct.
How many broken bolts do we have in the intake manifold, and how dirty is it, and what else can it be? I mean, how rusty the exhaust is. Can we even get the oxygen sensor in the exhaust, or do we have to replace it? And did he do replacement on this Galaxy you're doing?
On the exhaust, no.
Yeah.
Not yet. That's one of his projects coming up.
Okay. And describe the steering and suspension that you did.
It's a front and rear Hotchkiss performance suspension. I think it's a 2-inch drop front and rear, so it sits a little bit lower.
Okay.
But the steering geometry is much more revised, so it's more of a modern suspension on it.
And it has four-wheel disc brakes.
Four-wheel disc brakes.
Which means you change the, you add a booster, you change the master.
Actually, this one didn't, we didn't add a booster to this one. This was still a manual brake system.
Okay. So you didn't have to add a booster, so you didn't have to plumb vacuum.
No.
Okay. And did you have to put a proportioning valve in it to proportion?
That was part of the kit.
Okay.
So master cylinder, brake lines, calipers.
All that stuff.
Right.
So you had to take all the brake system off and put this new stuff on.
Right.
And the lines are pre-bent?
Well, no, we used some of his existing ones and had to run some new ones because the original system, this is a 65, so it's a common reservoir master cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a dual system that came out in 1967.
Okay.
So they had, on those old systems, there was one brake line that came out of the master cylinder that served all four wheels.
Front and back.
Right.
Okay.
But now with the tandem, we need to split that. We need to split the front from the rear. So in all effects, they're two different braking systems.
And that's what you did with the proportioning valve. You split it there.
Right.
Right? And the proportioning valve gives us, just round figures, 60% of the braking on the front and 40% on the back. So we're not locking up the back. We need to kind of lock the fronts before we do the back.
Because
the nose falls and pushes down on those tires. And the back lifts up.
Right.
Okay. All right. We got a caller. Who we got?
We have Frank.
Frank, good morning to you. What is it we can do for you?
Probably a simple problem, but on these LED lights, I'm working on a 2005 Mustang. And you buy this other little load equalizer if you're going to put it on a light that's flashing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I guess you're all aware of that.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you need that load equalizer on a regular circuit that don't blink?
Typically not. No, not if you just use them, let's say, on a brake light where you have red brake lights and amber turn signals on the rear.
Yeah.
You normally don't need it because we don't need the load to make the flasher flash with the brake lights because they come on and they stay on steady.
Well, this is for the third brake light.
That one doesn't flash either, so that shouldn't be an issue.
Well, no, I'm putting this flasher on there, but just basically on this load equalizer, do I need it on any circuit that's got a bulb on it?
You shouldn't. I mean, the first thing you do is just put them in without going to the trouble of putting a load equalizer on them and see how it reacts.
But typically, If the four turn signals, they're going to flash.
Yes.
It's likely you're going to need them there.
Right.
But if the light is on all the time that you ask for lights on and off, otherwise parking lights and brake lights.
Yes.
Those typically don't need the load equalizer.
No.
Just the signals. So the bulbs, that have two filaments are typically park and turn signal. And so if you have two little lead buttons on the bottom of the bulb, or you look inside the bulb, you can see two filaments. So those are typically the ones that need them. But if it has a single filament, it doesn't.
Right, but even the ones that have two, you may not need them because it's going to be your taillights and your brake lights.
Yeah.
But it still could have separate amber turn signals in the rear.
Okay, I see what you're saying. You have to know the colors, and you have to know what's
the function of that bulb.
Okay, turn on your four ways, and those are the ones that are going to need it. Whatever is on is going to need it, but the third brake light won't be there.
No, and the load is not to make the LED shine. It's to make the flasher operate correctly.
Okay, so it changes the signal to the flasher. Otherwise, the flasher does what? Rapid?
Or really rapid flashes.
So it's too fast.
Right.
So it's not sensing enough of a load.
Correct.
Okay, so this enhancer enhances the load. So the easy thing to do is, like we said, turn on the four-way flashers, walk around, mark the lights that are flashing. Those are the ones that typically need it.
Yes.
Okay. 602-508-0960. Frank, if you have a second question, just hang on the line and we'll get you. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. So all you have to do is to give us a call and we'll get to you just as quickly as we can. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Eddie Caruso. We're both ASE Master Certified Technicians. And between the two of us, we've got more than 60 years of experience. Thirty-three minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take our caller real quick, and then I've got some business to take care of. Eddie, you're up. How can I help you?
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I got a 83 Chrysler. It's 83 Fifth Avenue.
Okay.
And the driver's window was always a little loose when I got it, and I never got around to check it and take the upholstery off. So what happened now? The window doesn't go up or down unless I pull it up by hand, move it up, and then it won't stay. When I slam the door, it drops down about 2 inches.
You know.
Now, I took the.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I took the upholstery off on the inside because I'm pretty handy. I used to work on cars. Okay. But now I got a little problems with my legs and stuff. So I took the upholstery off. I think it might be the regulator, the motor. But that's riveted on. It's riveted on there.
Okay. All right.
In other words, if I wanted to take the motor out, I got to drill them three rivets out, I think.
All right. Eddie.
That's just the way they are. You drill the rivets out, and sometimes they'll give you bolts to put back in, or you just rivet the regulator back to the door.
So here's the question, though. Does he do the regulator and the motor at the same time? Does he do both?
It depends on how it's serviced. Sometimes you can buy one or the other, or they'll come as both as a set. But if you can get them both, that's the way to do it. Go in there once and be done with it.
Yeah, and I don't think you should do just – and I agree the regulator's broken because he can manually lift it up, and when he slams it, it drops down. It's come disconnected from the motor, right?
Or there's some slop or something.
Oh, so it don't have to be the motor?
Oh, no. It could be either one or both.
Yeah.
And until you get in there, you're not going to do it. But the regulator's –
yeah.
That's bad, right?
Yeah. It sounds like it might be a little bit of both, but we know for sure that the window, once it gets to a certain point, should stay there because the regulator and the motor hold it in place.
So exactly.
If it's moving, then there's a problem with the regulator. Mm-hmm. And it also could be that the motor doesn't want to pull the window up because it doesn't have the power that it did, but it also could be because the regulator's bad and it's binding.
Right. And then there's a drive between the motor and the regulator. So we use gears, we use nylon teeth, we do a variety of things. So do you have any idea what this Fifth Avenue at 83 has? Is it going to have
It should be just a regular scissor regulator.
Okay, now is the motor gear-driven?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So we don't know. Hey, let me ask you this. Eddie, when you use the button up and down, do you hear the motor run or not?
Yeah, I hear the motor run.
Okay, well, that sounds like a good news.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And then also the locks on the door work. If I want to lock the doors, I press the button, and the locks will go down.
Okay, well, that's a different circuit.
Yeah.
But it's the same keypad, probably. So,
okay.
Yeah. Right. I'm with Eddie. I think you should look for a package, and then, like he said, it'll come with a regulator and the motor, and all you have to do is get it together, put it in there, and then put the bolts in.
Right.
And then that will put it together.
Okay. Do you have to take the glass out?
You're going to have to somehow disconnect the glass from the regulator to replace the regulator. And it's always easier to pull the glass out of the door if you can. Set it on the back seat or somewhere where you don't have to work around the window with the glass being in the door trying to replace the regulator.
Some of the guys will take those rubber vice grips and put it on the top of the door frame and clamp the window.
Or the two suction cups with a cable that link the two.
But that's always dangerous because if that window gets away from you, it's going to break.
Right.
It's going to shatter.
Okay.
So take it out if you can. And I'm impressed with you taking this on, even though, you know, this is something most people wouldn't do is open up the door panel and start digging around in there. But
I got the door supposed to be off the door. I got that all off and I have the switches all lined up to move them. The back windows work, but the other one always had like a strain from the motor. It couldn't pull it up. I had to help it up by hand.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what the diagnosis of the problem is, okay? This is what caused the problem, your wife, okay? Just stick with that story, okay? This is a problem caused by your wife. Is that okay?
But the way she take the glass out, right?
Yeah, that's the easiest way.
Take the glass out.
Yes, take the glass out.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you very much, Eddie. Thank you. Thank you very much. That was a good question.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of impressed. Not too many people go into that. But his 85 Fifth Avenue, wasn't that what it was, is quite different than a 2016, 17, 18, anything. Right.
Well, I applaud the people that can do that. But I'm even more happy with the ones that know when to stop.
Yeah, because they bring it to you in a basket and the regulator's all bent up. And the real problem is we can't do an autopsy to find out what was wrong. It's gone. It's too late. So they bring us the body in 20 different pieces and we're going to have to replace everything because we don't know what was broken. And we're not going to take it apart two or three times and put one part in at a time. So that's kind of the way it is. Thompson's Auto Repair is a good shop in Mesa. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Thompson's has been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma are the salt of the earth. When you walk in, you're going to meet one of them, and you'll know what I'm talking about. They're the only shop in Mesa that Mark Salem says you should attend. Now, you should go over there and have an oil change done and see how they treat you. That's what you do on every new shop. But they have ASE certified technicians. Thompson's gives you the highest level of automotive service and then the friendly reminders that let you know when you might be due for service. So it's real easy and convenient to keep your car in tip-top shape you go along with Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. Then another place on the other side of the world is Kurt's Auto at I-17 and Bell. So we got Mesa, and now we got North Phoenix and Deer Valley covered up. Kurt's is an independent, family-owned and operated shop. Kurt's is a master technician. Eric is a master technician, and Jeff is a master technician. And I've just described the hierarchy at Kurt's. So we've got a service manager, we got an owner, and we got a lead tech, and those three guys can get cars fixed. So he's a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner, and that says a whole bunch. He opened in 1987. He works on domestic and import both gas and diesel. So if you're up near I-17 and the I-17 and Bell, the northeast corner, I-17 and Bell. My name's Mark Salem. Eddie Caruso sitting next to me, and we're still here. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark Salem and Eddie Caruso here, both ASE Master Certified Technicians, and we figure that we've got closer to 70 years of experience between the
Pretty
two
close.
Of us. Yeah. All right. The longest and continuous running transmission shop in the entire valley is Automatic Transmission Exchange. Since 1968, Phil and his staff and his family have been doing transmission diagnostic and repair work. So no matter where you live, 40th Street in Washington is centrally located, and Phil and his staff are really good at what they do, and like I said, I don't know of another transmission shop in the entire valley that has the years and years of experience that Automatic Transmission Exchange does. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir, Mark. I just came from out of town for Thanksgiving, and I heard that GM has a problem with their brakes. And they don't want to do recall. Have you heard anything about that?
No, huh?
What make or what model?
I sort of caught the tail end of the news. So, and GM doesn't want to do a recall, but there was a brake problem, I guess.
Okay, I can tell you there's lots of stuff out there that we know about before we see the recall. It's pattern failures and stuff like that. So there's a lot of that, but neither one of us, and correct me if I'm wrong, has seen a GM problem. Now, we've seen bad wheel sensors on every car.
Yes.
We've seen failure of master cylinders on every car. And except when you're in ABS, you're actually in a system that's pretty much the same as it was in the 60s and the 70s.
Yes.
Just basic hydraulic brakes. So I'm not quite sure what this is or where it came from, but today neither one of us believes that GM has a pattern failure that we've seen. And keep in mind,
for brakes.
And keep in mind too,
yeah, that's what they mentioned.
Yeah. And keep in mind too that we see probably 20, 25 cars a day. So, you know, it's, but I don't know the answer to that, and I'm sorry I can't answer that. But thank you, Tom, for calling in. Thank you very much. Let's go to Jack. Jack, you're up next.
Mark, this is a long-time listener. He helped me a lot between Thompson, Chuck, and one quality transmission. But I'll make it short. I have a 21.7 engine Dodge Ram. And I made the mistake of not going to Thompson, and I went to, I won't name the chain, I just with a coupon, and now I'm whatever the coupon is.
Okay. Hey, Gil, we're missing what he's got going. Let's put him on hold and just ask him to maybe get off Bluetooth or something like that. And I got Ram 6.7, but that's about all I got. So let's go to Chad, and then if, Gil, you'd talk to Jack, I'd appreciate it. Chad, good morning to you.
Hey. I'm glad you guys are old Ford experts because I got a brake issue. I'm trying to take 1978 Granada front disc brakes and put them on a 67 Ford Fairlane Ranchero. And it appears that the outer tie rod end may have to be changed to the Granada tie rod end to put it on the 67. Is that right?
And it depends on the size of the knuckle where it goes into the spindle. Is one larger than the other where there's not a...
Yeah, and so... I just wanted to know if you guys had experienced that before.
Well,
I changed the tie rod, and I'm hoping that the adjuster sleeves are the same. I haven't taken it apart to look at that yet.
Okay, let us talk about it real quick. If the adjuster sleeves fit, then the tie rod sleeve just lets us set the alignment.
Yeah, set the toe. Yeah.
Set the toe. So it wouldn't make any difference as long as it didn't hit the backing plate and as long as he had all the way left and all the way right. And as long as the thread matched, and it was a tight fit, it'll work.
Right.
It'll work.
Now, is the issue that you're having, is the tie rod on the Mustang, the tapered end, is it smaller than what needs to be correct for the Granada spindle?
Yeah, I think the Fairlane, it's a 67 Fairlane, I think that the tie rod, outer tie rod end that goes in the spindle hole is smaller.
Okay. All right. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm thinking they're... I've seen it, and I'm not sure where you would get them, or I've seen them when they come in kits, where there's actually another sleeve that goes on top of the tie rod, and then you put that sleeve, the tie rod, into the spindle, and that takes up that space that you need to have.
The beveled pin
right. That
goes through the spindle assembly,
yes.
And ties the tie rod to there. Did you find any sleeves in your kit?
I didn't get a kit yet. I just have the two cars apart sitting next to each other, and I'm swapping the brakes out.
Okay.
My other question is, okay, so the Granada had front disc manual brakes, and I want to put power on the Fairlane when I put it in the 67 Fairlane. Can I use the same proportioning valve that came out of the Granada and just put a booster on it?
Wait a minute. Does the proportioning valve come from a disc front drum back?
Yes, Granada,
And you're going to put it on disc front drum back.
Yep, but I want to put a power booster on it.
Yeah, you're fine using the prop valve off the Granada.
Yeah, and the reason you're saying that is that they're basically the same drivetrain or chassis.
Right.
Close enough, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, you can use a proportioning valve, and you can add power brakes to it, and it'll be okay. And if you're lucky, the power brake booster will fit in the same firewall configuration, or there'll be a bracket, right?
Yes.
And he'll probably have to change the rod and the brake pedal, too. Yes.
Well, the rod and the booster is probably going to be integral with the booster.
Okay.
So the only thing you have to worry about is just your pedal geometry, because normally they're a little bit different from the power brake cars to a manual brake car.
So the pedal may be lower, but it has to still be firm, or it could be higher and be higher firm.
Yeah, typically on a manual car, you have more of a leverage at the pedal versus a non or versus a power brake, because you're getting the power from the booster to where on a manual, your power comes from your leg.
Okay, so the pedal's going on the manual is going to be a little higher and a little bit more throw. It's going to have a little bit more movement. And the power brake, the vacuum-operated brakes, the pedal's going to be, it's going to be a lot quicker, and it won't have nearly the stroke.
Right.
Okay. All righty. Listen, Chad, thank you very much. That's a good one. Now, Chad, if you want, you can go to SalemBoysAuto.com. There's an email link there. And you can ask questions. You can't go overboard, but you can ask questions that we can print and hand to Eddie. Eddie will fill out the information, and then we'll send it back to you. And Andy will be your go-between in between that. So, all righty, Jim, you're up next. Jim, how can I help you?
Good. Hi, Mark. I have a neighbor that just bought a brand-new 2018 Ram 2500 67 diesel.
Uh-huh.
And we were just, he comes over and shoot the breeze for a while. He was talking about he can't wait to expire so he can start tinkering with. We were talking about oil filters. And Daniel said that he can only put Mopar oil filters on there. And I told him after listening to your show for so many years that, no, I think that's just a money thing, that he could use any filter on there. It doesn't have Mopar.
Okay, I have two thoughts. Number one, I don't put a Mopar filter on my 6.7 diesel.
Okay.
And number two, when they dictate that you have to use that filter, they have to provide it for free. So sometimes it comes out of someone's mouth that doesn't mean it's God's word to the world. Sometimes somebody says that don't know crap from Shinola. And Ram doesn't make its own oil filters. Dodge doesn't make its own oil filters anyway. It could be Wix. It could be Napa.
Champ.
It could be Champ. Those guys make virtually every oil filter out there. So tell him that, you know what I do? I'd go to the used car lot and crawl underneath there, and he's going to find a bunch of different oil filters on those cars. And then he can go, what about you?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something else, too. I know firsthand knowledge from oil guys that pour oil, that there's dealers out there that say that they're using X oil, and it might be Dodge, Ford, GM, and they're not. They're using the cheap. Now, cheap doesn't mean cheap, but less expensive oil. And that happens in our industry, both in the independents, the chain stores, and the dealerships. Sometimes we forget to take the tags down. And it could be that Mark Salem says I'm pouring Motorcraft when really I'm pouring Vaveline or Quaker State or something else. Not that they're just less money than Motorcraft, or they may be. So that's what it happens. But I'll tell you something else. I use a filter that we can actually clean on the oil filter. And it comes with a couple of tools that I keep in the glove box. So I can clean my oil filter and reuse it. That's what I actually use. But anyway,
really?
Yeah. And if you want to find out about that, have you cleaned mine?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
It's got a micro mesh stainless two-stage screen on it.
Okay. And you've cleaned them and seen trash in there?
Well, I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't say trash because you don't have trash floating around there. But yeah, it's.
You haven't seen any part of my internal motors in there,
have
you?
No.
But you would. Right?
If there was an issue, I'd see it.
You'd see it in the rods. You'd be rod bearings and burn up and main bearings and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know how much that cost. I'm perfectly happy with it. Eddie, would you put that in your new 1867?
Sure.
And they would have to prove that that had something to do with the failure, and the filter manufacturer is going to step up and help you out. But I call strike one and strike two on what your friend's been told. So
that's what I thought. And how many times...
Ask me that again.
How many times keep cleaning it?
Oh, you can clean it as many times as you
definitely.
Want. Yeah, I mean, I'll go 200,000 or 300,000 miles as long as my motor will let me, and I'll just continue to use that. It saves me money in the long run because I'm not going to have to screw a filter on there.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy with that. But if he wants a Wix, a Champ, or what's the other one?
Oh, there's so many. There's Fram, Purelator.
Fram, yeah. Any of the name brands, they all make it for the diesel. So any of the name brands is fine. He could get on the internet and search the cheapest one of all. So.
Well, it just amazed me that I can remember in 1965 when we lived up in Wisconsin, my folks bought a home with an acre lot. Paid twice as much for this truck as my folks did for that house.
Oh, yeah. I can top that. My first engine analyzer. Remember when this in the 70s they say put it on the machine, put it on the box. Remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we had the Allen Smart Scope.
Exactly. Well, we had the Bear Ace. I paid more for the Bear Ace than I did my first house, and that was in 1979, 1981. I paid more. I paid $33,000 for my first house, and I remember that it was the tall $30,000 for that bear machine. And as a matter of fact, you know, we just threw it away not too long ago. Now, it didn't work, but we kept it for parts, and we had hoped someday they could rejuvenate it because it was a pretty good machine. But in reality, we ended up throwing it away. But those machines were from the early 80s. They were taking up room for my wife to store her liquor.
Well, they had a cabinet at the bottom.
They did. Well, you should have said something before we threw all that stuff away. Of course, I'm kidding. Okay, if you want to ask us a question and you missed the show, it's easy. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. If you would give us a phone number, I like to call you. On the other hand,
2 minutes.
It depends on who's best for your question. Oftentimes, I'll ship it to one of the guys, not oftentimes, sometimes, I'll ship it to one of the guys, and they'll call you from Salem Boys Auto Phone, that's what it say. But if I call you, it's coming through as a blocked number, for obvious reasons. So, just leave us a number, but if you don't leave us a number, you want an email answer, and we'll do our best to do that as well. So, I am in charge of the email stuff, and so, I can Andy is too, my daughter, but I can virtually assure you that that'll get answered. So, Eddie, now that we've told everybody what a Ford guy you are,
yeah.
Well, what did you drive to my house today?
My Lexus.
Your driveway, your garage, name them. And this is in various states of repair.
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
Go. 87 Ford Thunderbird Coupe.
87 Ford Thunderbird Coupe with a turbo?
Yeah, T3 turbo.
Okay.
1988 Ford Travelmaster C motorhome.
Okay.
1966 Chrysler Town and Country.
Okay.
1990 Ford Mustang GT.
Okay.
And my 2001 Lexus.
And we're not going to get into the motorcycles.
No.
Because there's a bunch more in there. Eddie's a single guy, and he has this giant garage, and he has cars in there. Now, the Mustang's pretty fast.
Yeah.
And so is that Thunderbird Turbo. All right. What else is a rocket ship inside there besides your R1 motorcycle?
The V-Max.
Oh, yeah, the V-Max. Okay. All right. There was a time 100 years ago, where we were in an area that was completely silent, and Eddie rode a wheel stand on his motorcycle for like a mile and a half and made two right turns at the same time. So anyway, Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark with a K at MarkSalem, like the cigarette, .com. If you have a question, you're more than welcome to send me a question and tell me your make and model, miles, and then tell me what the symptoms are. We'll be back next week at 10 o'clock.